Hello, welcome to this AHDB podcast. We all like to be liked, but you can't make everyone like you. If you want proof of that, just ask AHDB. In August 2018, DEFRA sent out to levy payers and others a request for views, and within 3 months had received 900 or so responses. In April 2020, a 70-page summary of those views and the government response was published. Victoria Prentice MP is the Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State at DEFRA, and in the foreword commented, "The request for views provides us with an opportunity to make changes that will reflect the responses of the levy payers and other stakeholders to ensure we have an organisation fit for the future." I won't read you every word, but I want to give listeners a little bit of context to this story. Victoria Prentice also wrote, "The responses show that the majority of respondents, and in fact that's about 64% or is 64%, feel there is a need for a statutory levy to continue. The fragmented nature of some sectors of the farming industry means that there is a strong case for some form of statutory levy to support collective endeavour in areas such as market access, R&D, technical advice and knowledge exchange. It's apparent that respondents want to see an overhaul of the current structures of AHDB and a reform of its governance so that it's operating a more modern and effective way." I'm John Bates and I'm joined by Chairman of AHDB, Nicholas Sophia, to talk about the organisation's reaction to the comments and observations in the Request for Views report and what, if any, are the next steps. Nicholas joined AHDB at the beginning of April 2020 and was appointed by the government for a three-year tenure. Thanks for coming on the podcast again, Nicholas. Respondents to requests for views highlighted the need for AHDB change in a number of areas. Are we talking about significant reform or just a few tweaks?
So, John, can we just put this in some context? I was appointed with a remit to bring about change, and that has been accepted by, very much accepted by, the board and by the leadership team. So we are ready and willing to make change. It's not as if this is a denial of the fact that there are problems, and the problems are not just about people being unhappy and dissatisfied, but it's also about this enormous change that's taking place throughout agriculture and the businesses that we serve. So change is going to happen. And since I came in, I think I said at the last time we met that I have been actually pretty impressed, actually very impressed, by the way in which the team have responded to COVID-19 and the demands and the problems, etc. So I think that without AHDB, just take that small micro area of COVID-19, big area of COVID-19. Without AHDB, there would have been a significant hole in agricultural response, and particularly around beef carcass balancing and dairy usage, as well as labour. So I am actually coming at this from the point of view of AHDB having a very important role to play, not just in terms of crisis, but as we go forward. There is no doubt that when we look at things like pesticides and herbicides and research and development and market access to foreign markets and how we deal with imports, if there isn't an AHDB, then the industry has a problem. But I also come at it from the point of view to recognise that agriculture is not just one monolithic structure. So all parts of agriculture have a different need and a different view of what they want out of a central body like AHDB. And you can see that reflected in the request for views. So this is not a request for views response from levy payers that says we all have one voice, which says there is a problem here or there is a problem there. It's complex. It's very complex. What we do know, and if I was sitting there signing a levy payers document, as I have done in the past as a farmer, I'd also be saying, look, sharpen your pencil, get on with keeping costs down, give us more which we need, which is front end research and development, market access and knowledge exchange. So it's all against that background. So I think that it would be fair to say the whole team, board and team, are coming at this not from a negative point of view, not from a defensive point of view, but from a very positive point of view that says we are grasping that opportunity to make change. So where are we? We'll be publishing a statement as to what our commitments are for response to the request for views. And essentially, without being trite about it, we've honed it down to five areas. And let me come back to the one you first mentioned, which is governance structure and committees, etc. 1 month into my chairmanship, so in May, we looked at that one, and we decided we'd set up a governance group of three key board members, chaired by one of the independent board members, the chief executive, and an independent consultant. And that has started. And they are instructed to come back before Christmas, i.e. 4 months, which is pretty short, with a recommendation on a revision of the total governance structure.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Let's just move perhaps then to one of the findings of the report. It's talking about a ballot and it's making, in fact, a pledge that there will be a ballot. And again, I'll use a quote if I may. There's strong support for a ballot of levy payers every 5 years as to whether a levy in each sector should continue. A ballot of levy payers could potentially provide industry with greater ownership and say in the future direction of AHDB. Where do you stand on this topic of a ballot, Nicholas?
Someone said to me a long time ago that levies are a democratic statement of payment. I mean, you know, I know that they're statutory, but at the end of the day, the levy payers will decide collectively, come what may, whether a levy is to be paid or not. I mean, Britain lost its American colonies on the basis of taxation without representation. So clearly, we have to recognise and must recognise that levy payers must have a say as to whether they think AHDB is doing a good job or not, and whether the levy is value or not, and what form of levy should be paid, if any at all. So yes, we are committed to a regular ballot. There is a procedure already in existence under our existing statutory instrument, which says that petitioners can petition for a levy if they get to a 5%, I think it is, number of a particular sector. And I think that may happen. I mean, we know that some petitioners are already looking to see whether they want to ask for a ballot in a particular sector. So by the time this podcast comes out, maybe the world's changed and there is a ballot already on a particular sector. Maybe not. But I think that, yes, we accept that there will be ballots. That's the first thing. The second thing is, it sounds very simple, hold a ballot. But actually, and it's written quite clearly that people can call for a ballot. The problem is what sort of ballot? And remember that we have a responsibility, a statutory responsibility that is different for each product, each sector, and each country. So, for example, we have a remit which for red meat and pork, which is in England, isn't in Wales and isn't in Scotland, although we work closely with HEC and Quality Meats for Scotland. So first of all, what does a ballot look like in terms of regions? Secondly, what does it look like in terms of, is it one man, one vote? Sorry, one business, one vote, I should say. Or is it a vote that's weighted to your payment, your levy payment? That has to be worked through. That is already in process. We are working on that now. We are saying in this statement of commitment that there will be regular ballots. We've avoided the word 5 years, not because 5 years isn't a reasonable ballot length. It's an election cycle. But I don't want anybody to be saying, oh, you're pushing it back 5 years. No, we're not. What we're saying is there will be a ballot which will start as soon as we can reasonably get the construct right. And once we have had a chance to put together a new governance structure, a strategy that is accepted and adopted by the industry, and a chance to prove ourselves. So we will have a ballot in the near future. When I say near future, within the 5 year period. Personally, I would like to see it being on the 5 year anniversary or thereabouts of the request for views. which actually takes you another 2.5 years further on from now. But we will have to see. But there is a commitment. There will be a commitment to regular ballots. Absolutely.
You've mentioned the strategy and you've spoken about it on a previous podcast. Are you in a position to tell us more about the new strategy?
The strategy for consultation will go out now in the autumn. It'll go out in late October, I guess, but somewhere around about then. I'll tell you now that it will focus on the major elements of market development and farm performance. So it will really focus on the issue that from the 1st of January next year, we are all facing a massive change. We don't know what the trade agreements will be. We have a clear view as to where government are intending to go in terms of farm payments, but we don't know the details of that. So clearly a strategy cannot deal with the detail of the unknown. It can only set the outline and the rest will follow. But what it does say is that to understand how to develop programs, you have to have evidence. You have to understand the detail of what is going on, both in the marketplace and in farming in terms of productivity. And data is going to be absolutely central to that understanding. So the first point I'd make is the center of any strategy for us going forward will be evidence. It will be how do we actually help not how do we create all the evidence, but how do we help orchestrate the evidence so that we have a clear picture as an industry as to what's going on in marketplaces and in research and development and productivity that we can all plug into and make those decisions. From there, it will be about farm performance. And here, let me be very careful. If I'm a really sophisticated, advanced cereal producer, when farm performance is mentioned, I have a view that is quite different from somebody who is raising a few cattle on a hill in Wales. And if I was raising, as I said to you in the first interview I had with you, if I was raising a few cattle on the hills in Wales, I'd be much more concerned about at the moment about market access and promotion than I would about tell me how to actually grow better grass. If I'm a cereal producer and I know I'm heading for a commodity world, I'd be saying, look, give me all the work, the support you can in terms of research and development. If I was a horticultural producer, I'd be saying, give me everything you can on research and development in terms of pests and diseases. So when we talk about farm performance, it's extremely granular and the strategy will make clear view of that, that this is not a one size fits all, but farm performance is key. Nobody is going to be able to walk away from the fact that survival and prospering in this new world will be about being on top of the latest technology, the latest abilities to perform. And then the other part of it is actually about markets and market development. And again, you know, there are parts of British agriculture that say, I'm not worried about you telling me about markets. I'm very close to retailers. I don't need you. But there are other parts which are desperately in need of support. Now, whether that be in terms of exports and, you know, what we've opened, we're getting pork into China. We've got, as I said to you before, we're funding 80% of the specialist member of the embassy in China to support our activities. All of that is critical, as is our reputational work in the UK in terms of why British consumers should buy British product. So the strategy will be about farm performance, but it will also be about market development. And that doesn't mean to say every producer will be wanting to plug into all of it. So you'll get a general overview from the strategy. It will explain why. And that will be backed by specific business plans for how we do it. And from there will be the sector plans about how each sector will want to plug in. And the levy money will be spent according to the needs of each sector, not because of some grand scheme that many people will find doesn't actually apply to them in a different way. And there's a commitment to that in our statement of this week, which says that we will talk to levy payers. We have done, we do, but we'll talk to you much more closely around how you think the levies should be spent and our view as to what the cross-sector benefits are. And let us not forget, John, that in this new world, what I need in terms of pest and disease control in a protected glasshouse can well be affected by the research and development that's being done around pests and diseases in open field. Or what I do in terms of research and development in terms of zero carbon can have implications and opportunities around the whole of agriculture. So there are synergistic areas where we are far better off as an industry to do things together than just to focus down. So it's complex, but we will explain it, we will discuss it, and we will take views. So I think that it's much more about recommitting to open discussion and to engagement.
Are you going to be looking at levies?
Let me just talk about the levy. If I'm a farmer who really doesn't want to plug into anything in terms of information or support or whatever, why do I pay a levy? I want it to be voluntary. And the answer is that actually you already do plug in. Whether you know it or not, the work that we're doing has implications for you. And very often the work that we do is unsung. Now, we've got to communicate better. We've got to tell people what we are doing. But a voluntary levy doesn't work. All around the world where it's been tried, it just falls apart. So there will always be this tension between a statutory levy and representation such as the unions, who will have members not wanting to support it. But I think that there is no question that, I mean, for example, the horticultural levy, the potato levy, they were structured before AHDB was created, and they're still the same, and they're not right. You know, the fact that the horticultural levy is based around last year's turnover, compared with most crops where it's based on either a headage payment or an acreage payment or whatever, does not reflect reality. The fact that the potato levy is based on planted acreage doesn't deal with what happens if there's flooding and you can't lift potatoes. We have committed to, ever since I've been here for four months, we've been looking at levies, and we will be coming out with revised suggestions on levies. But I would go back and say that what people don't really get, although we publish our annual accounts, is that since AHDB was created, apart from a couple of levies, they've all been static. They haven't increased. I mean, AHDB is currently working on something like 26% less income than it did when AHDB was created. Now, is that a signal that we've got to increase levies? No, it's a statement that we have to actually revise the way we collect levies, the way we actually agree a levies. But it also means that we've actually got to look at what we spend our money on. So I think we won't be liked by many people when we start saying we've got to prioritize. In order to give you value, in order to move the dial, where what you spend through us makes sense, not only has it got to actually be relevant to you, but it's also got to be able to move the dial. So I think, you know, John, forlorn hope, I'd love to be loved. I don't think I'm always going to be loved in this role, and I don't think AHDB will always be flavor of the month. But with a regular ballot, levy payers will have a chance to say what they really think.
Yeah, and that saying what they really think, that's a really important part of this communication cycle that you've spelled out. You're clearly a communicator. You've talked about, you've made reference to that a few times in this podcast. I'm thinking about the Victoria Prentice, the Undersecretary at DEFRA. Have you spoken to DEFRA about the request for views, and can you sort of summarise where they're sitting in all of this as far as you're concerned?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'd say that's a question for you to ask DEFRA where they sit. I talk to DEFRA all the time. I mean, we are, let's get this right, we are a non-governmental public body, which means that although DEFRA ministers appoint the board, they do not actually dictate what we do. So we are independent. We are actually, in real terms, I suppose, we are a membership organisation funded by our levy payers. So that's where our responsibility lies. But come back to our relationship with DEFRA. Look, DEFRA, I think I would say, are very keen that AHDB plays a significant part in much of their forward thinking around various programs that we are developing with them. And those are long-term programs for all sorts of things, from productivity to how maybe Elms is developed. So we play an important role that they feel that they either cannot or do not want to play, which is the middle ground between government and farmers. They also recognize that there are congratulations for the work we've done. So, yeah, we're in a good place in terms of our relationship with DEFRA and with DIT, where we're also involved in the trade negotiations, particularly with America and Japan, et cetera. That doesn't mean to say that we can sit back and say, you know, DEFRA are happy with us. No, they're not. I mean, DEFRA, you saw it in Victoria Prentice's point. And it is pretty much the same as what the NFU say, which is, yeah, we want you. We want the organization. But in this new world, you've got to be value for money, and you've got to deliver, and you've got to change in terms of your levy payer engagement, all of those things. And that's what this is all about. This is what about the commitment to reform is all about. It's not about saying we're awful. It's definitely not saying we're not delivering. It's about saying we've got lessons to learn. And you know, in this world, for me, there are two types of people, aren't there? There are people who enjoy change and people who hate change. And if you're a change manager, and that's what I've been all my life, then actually you embrace change and you say, it's a challenge, it's an opportunity, how do we do better? If there was ever a moment of change, it's now. And that's why I took on the job when asked if I would as chairman of HDB, because agriculture is about to, and horticulture about to face the most enormous change. Many people don't recognize how big a change it's going to be. And that means we as HDB have to change not only as much as the change, but ahead of it. What I would say is that come 1st of January this coming year, the challenge is on all of us to reduce costs, to make sure we're producing the right product, to make sure we're producing it as productive, as effectively as possible, to make sure we're in the right markets. Enormous challenges, and we can't sit still. And that's why AHDB not only has to respond to the request for views, but it has to actually challenge itself anyway. We're in for massive change as an industry, and AHDB has got to be a very significant player in helping farmers and growers deal with that change.
Nicholas, thank you very much for sparing the time to be on the podcast. So there's a lot to absorb there. But to summarise, we've heard that AHDB is going to have a ballot, probably sooner rather than later. The strategy will be out for consultation, and that focuses mainly on farm performance and market development. Sector's levies will be reviewed, particularly around horticulture and in potatoes. And there's a review underway to look at the governance structure. There's a lot going on. And there's 5 commitments to levy payers, and we're going to hear more about them in due course. If you want to comment on this podcast or suggest topics for future episodes, please visit the AHDB website, ahdb.org.uk, and fill out the feedback form. It's quick and it's easy, and we want to hear from you. Thank you to my guests, Nicholas Sophia, and podcast producer, Aisha Shabman. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.